What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin and I am your host. And here with me today is my brother Jay, who will be in every episode.
Co-hosting up a storm over here on the pop. Happy to be popping with you today, man.
You are not the co-host.
Well,
I'm not even gonna play with subtleties today, huh? Pure bluntness.
Just
because actually I believe what you're wearing today. Are you wearing a Mickey Mouse pin?
Mickey Mouse pin?
Is that what you got going on?
I got a Mickey Mouse pin right here.
You got yourself a little Mickey Mouse pin? Is it because you forgot to wear a Mickey Mouse article of clothing today and you were like, I'm gonna go find our...
It is not.
You are kidding me. Oh my gosh. I have been conned. Goodness gracious. So here I am looking at Jay's outfit because he's like rooting around in the office. He's like, I gotta find that board with all the pins on it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
I know exactly. You were trying to outfashion me again with the mouse.
Right.
Mick the Mouse.
Here he is.
And I was like, okay, look at this. He's going to go get a pin specifically so that he can still be strutting his Mickey Mouse garb. And I was thinking that he forgot. And instead, he is wearing my wedding socks.
That's right. Not only were you fooled by not noticing my excellent Mickey Mouse socks, but these were socks purchased specifically to be worn at your wedding.
They were exactly that.
There they are.
Yep. It was actually a whole thing too, because we didn't have like fun socks and we were like, we really need them. And they were, fortunately they ended up fitting. But I remember the day of, they were like men's size 7 to 9.
Yeah.
So they were like going to be like a bit too small for literally every single one of like my groomsmen.
Yeah. Well, it was such a thing because I knew this was an issue, like looking for Mickey Mouse socks. And we went out to like Disney Springs the night before your wedding, or maybe like, when we got to the park.
Right, right.
And I was like,
we were being on top of it.
We were on top of it. And I was like, I got to look for socks.
Right.
Because certainly if you go to like any section of any gift shop in Disney World, they have like choices upon choices upon choices. And all we're looking for is Mickey Mouse socks. Like if they're going to have anything in the sock department, it's going to have Mickey Mouse on it.
Of course.
Even if all they have is Mickey Mouse socks, no problem. That's all we need.
Right.
And I go and I find it. Unbelievably, this is like the one thing Disney does not like produce en masse. And there's like 3 sock choices, and I go and I found these exact socks, and I was like, but they're like kids socks, they're not going to fit anyone, this is terrible, they'd otherwise be great. And so I was like, the search continues. But then on I think it was the morning of your wedding, like, you know, we were doing like pictures or something with the groomsmen, and you had like one of the bridesmaids' dates, like, you're like, your job today is to find us socks. And he was like, I got it. And he came back with this exact pair.
This exact pair. Shout out to Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. You had courage where I did not, because I got them. And I was like, oh man, I could have been the hero with the socks.
But instead, now Kevin is our knight in shining armor.
Kevin is the sock hero. And we put them on and they all fit anyway. And I was like, man.
I know. But it all worked out. You were a hero in plenty of other ways. So yeah. I do appreciate that. Yeah. I appreciate that. So since we tangented immediately off of our special guest thing, it actually makes me want to tangent into today's corny joke to get things going. This corny joke actually came from Little Colonel Sarah Gonzalez.
Okay.
And I thought it was so perfect because it hails back to a topic we were talking about. I think it was a couple of weeks ago on the Pop Now, where when we used to go to Virginia Tech football games, we had season tickets, you and I did, and we had 4 total. At the time, I was not dating Alice yet. So week in, week out, you would always bring Beth, and then I always had the opportunity to bring what we very affectionately called the gob.
The guest of Ben.
The guest of Ben.
Right.
Kind of like what you are here on the show.
No. Bow, 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 bow. Nope. I'm more like the Cotby. Is that right? No, that's not right.
That's okay.
The Cotby. There you go.
Okay, if you say so.
That's the co-host to Ben.
So this is the corny joke came from Sarah Gonzalez, and it is like the most exclusively specific to the popcorn culture community corny joke there could possibly be. But Jay, I dare say that this joke is perfect.
Perfect.
It is like, it is so good that I was like, man, gots to bring it up on the Pop. Okay. Basically the note from them said, so in reference to your story about bringing a guest to the football games with you and calling them your gob, guest of Ben, since Jay's wife, Beth, is his eternal guest, doesn't that make Alice your everlasting gobstopper?
Oh,
you get it.
It's
so perfect.
It's so perfect because it uses the full phrase everlasting gobstopper, which is like the catchphrase for the candy,
right?
And she is like
preventing all preventing future gobs.
Future gobs. She is stopping other gobs.
Yes.
Oh
but
my gosh.
But there's also like that like marriage element of it in the like foreverness of it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's I was perfect.
Like, I read this and I, like my jaw hit the floor. I was just like, Sarah, you have crushed it. Like you are unable to do a gobstopper with your teeth. I see what I did there.
Okay. I see what you okay. did. Okay. You brought it back full circle.
Full circle, just like a gobstopper.
Oh,
because they're round. Because
they're round.
We could do this all day.
We could do
kind of like what you would do if you were eating a gobstopper because they're everlasting. Oh my gosh.
Dude,
it was too good.
I cannot believe how many times you were able to do that.
Had to do it.
Oh man. Oh,
we can just end it there. Guys, thanks for tuning
thanks
in.
Thanks for tuning. Pop up. Should I say gob gob?
Oh,
maybe. Probably not.
You probably should because you are my guest of Ben.
I'm pretty sure we just determined that all guests of Ben have been eternally stopped.
Okay, okay.
Right?
That,
so
actually, that's
actually like, this helps my cause because now I can't be the guest because
it really does help your cause.
Because Alice is forever stopping the gob.
So now I can never have a guest ever again.
That's right.
Which is a real bummer as someone who likes to host things.
Yeah.
This is actually, it is very funny because I would say with all Super Carlin Brothers projects that we've ever done, there has been, and not in like a way that I don't mean for this to be like self-deprecating because it truly is not that way. But in a lot of ways, I would have felt that throughout all of the things that we've ever done, I very much felt like second chair in a lot of like our specifically hosting like version of what it means to like run this business that we do together.
Okay.
You and I both know that like out here in the real world, like that you sort of are like the creative head of the business and I am like the business head of the business.
Right.
That, like in that way, we both very much equally contribute. But otherwise, like there has forever been the case that like Super Carlin Brothers, for one, just for starters, was your idea to begin with. Like
sure.
It was a project that you headed and you created the original logos and the actual, like you were the one who signed up for the like email account and the YouTube.
Right.
All the things. And then even going beyond that though, like whenever we've hosted like gaming episodes and I don't know, any offshoots that we've ever done, almost always it started with you being like, you know, hello and welcome everybody to Super Carlin Gaming, where today we're doing the
let me harken back to a different time, to three offices ago.
It's been years, folks.
The Super Carlin Gaming Mario Kart 8 roulette challenge where we try and three-star every course with randomly chosen cards and characters. Boom
did
got it.
It nailed it
nailed
I'm
it.
So impressed.
Yeah.
Hosted.
Boom. Well, you hosted the Sims 4 Founders series.
That is true. That is true. But that took some gumption that I only possessed because we had already started doing Popcorn Culture, and I'd kind of gotten like, you know, my hosting training wheels taken off, so to speak.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
And where am I going with this? There was a reason that I brought this up. Oh, but no, the actual truth of it was that back in those days where you were doing those openers for the gaming channel, I remember always being like both intimidated and impressed by the situation, like because it was like, that's a lot of pressure. Like I wouldn't want to start the episode.
Yeah, that's the vibe I'm going for just at all times. Just like, wow, I don't know, I'm intimidated.
You do put off just general intimidation at all times.
Yeah, you see me coming, you're like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
Just like, that's, no, not at all.
That is the general aura that you have about you at all times.
I don't think so.
Raw intimidation,
but also like, wow.
You would have made a great professional wrestler.
I would have made a good professional wrestler.
Right. Like
going
like,
out there just like throwing down fake threats. I'll see you at WrestleMania.
It would have worked. Fun fact, when it came to pro wrestling, the person who was going to win the bout was always the person who unexpectedly showed up because they had the element of surprise on their hands.
Oh, the element of surprise. It always wins in wrestling.
It always wins. Pro wrestlers were never prepared for the element of surprise, despite the fact that week in, week out, it is the very kryptonite of every single pro wrestler.
Right. It's never like the person who is about to get, like the person who's winning the match and about to pin the other person, and then in comes that person's allies to like, you know, beat up the whoever's winning.
Yeah.
It's like, it's never that the person turns around and sees them, even though they've got like a 4-second lead time to watch them run down this enormous catwalk.
Right.
They never turn around, see them like drop some kicks to the face and then proceed to win the match.
But you know, one of the other thing about this is that they are in the ring. The other person has to enter the ring. They have the high ground.
It's very important.
It's very important. I mean, and if we've learned anything from Star Wars, the high ground is like absolutely fundamental unless you're Darth Maul.
Yeah. Unless you're Darth Maul.
specifically against Obi-Wan, who has like
the worst
all manner of mastery over any ground level that there is.
That's right.
Obi-Wan can't be defeated on any ground.
On any ground. Level ground, high ground, low ground. Man's got it covered.
He's got it covered.
He's got it covered. Right. You know, okay, the thing, speaking about professional wrestling, I feel like everyone, I don't know, when we were growing up, everyone I knew at one point was like huge into like professional wrestling.
Yes, I have so point. I have so many thoughts on this, but continue. I won't distract you.
Well, so I remember as a kid, there was this like huge debate as to whether or not the wrestling was real and whether or not that made it worth watching. Like, it's not even real. Why do you like it? It's like, first of all, most TV shows aren't real. Most are fictional.
Right.
Yeah, but I guess maybe the thinking is that the draw is that you're watching real fights or something. But here's the thing. Well, first of all, it's definitely not real fighting because they'd be just straight up snapping necks and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
If that was the case. The point is, whether or not the fighting is real, the outcome is still a mystery.
Yes.
Like, you still don't know who's going to win, who will be benefited by the element of surprise.
Right.
And that's still what makes it entertaining.
Yes, in a way that it, like, really, like, it will suck you in. Like, and you might think that you wouldn't like watching pro wrestling until it is on. And I would be willing to bet, and this is, I mean, it could be the same thing. And I used to give this example about The Bachelor, like when I first ever started watching it. Like I didn't want to admit openly that I enjoyed it. So what I would always be like, oh my, it's like a train wreck. Like you just can't turn your head away. Like as soon as you walk in, it's like, wait, but what are they doing? Like, and this was like me attempting to like, it was the way that I was allowed to like it, but I was also actively being extremely forward about like, oh no, I get it. Like it's ridiculous. Like I fully understand, but that's part of what makes it fun.
That's what makes it. It was this, we've talked about this before where you're trying to arrange the circumstances such that you're able to do something you feel guilty about, but in an acceptable way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I totally think you're right about wrestling, by the way. Like it is, first of all, if you're listening, it is way more popular than you're aware. If you're like, who, what? No, I mean, maybe, probably odds that I would bet the data would tell you that that you do like professional wrestling.
The data almost suggests that
you
should. The data
suggests that you listener do. But based just on the numbers, did you know, like, fun fact, that the WWE Facebook page has more fans than all 32 NFL teams combined?
It is mind-blowing.
It is mind-blowing how you're so unaware of how popular it is. But let me just say, as you know, Ben, for all the bingo players at home, I used to work at a concert venue.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's a bingo space for
sure. That's a bingo space for sure. I saw that the bingo subreddit thing had been started today. So we'll see how that begins to fill out and keep you all posted.
Yes, of course.
But so one of the events that used to come through the venue I worked at was WWE.
Right.
Like they would come through twice a year. And normally they would do a off or one live performance and one not live performance.
Yeah.
So by live, I mean it would be televised as it was, not as it was happening, but it would be televised.
Wait, they televised Roanoke?
Oh, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah. So there's two versions of the show. One where they just come and they just put on the show just for the people in the arena.
Okay.
And that's like one thing they do. And then they have the televised version. And on the televised version, those are a much bigger deal. Like they sell better and stuff because, of course, you know, you're going to be on TV. It's like there's stakes.
Sure.
Plot development can happen. You know, nothing that's going to be finalized. That doesn't happen until the pay-per-view event this Saturday night, you know. Butts is actually what I'm talking about here, because they are on TV. One of my jobs was to find seat fillers.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I remember now you asking me to do this one time, and I wasn't able to.
Yeah, and it was a very unusual thing. But basically, they just don't. Whenever they're like, you know, basically whatever side they're shooting the match from, you'll be able to see the audience, and they just don't want it to ever look like there are empty seats
right
in the crowd. And you know, if you're within view of the camera, those seats are sold out no matter what, you know.
Okay.
that's happening. Those are going to be filling up no matter what. But what they don't account for is people needing to use the restroom or people needing to go buy concessions,
right,
or go take a phone call or something, and those people will get up, and so the seats will look empty, and they don't want that. They don't want the seats to look empty. So they have seat fillers. And basically what our job was, you get like little floor seats sort of in the back. So you're pretty, you know, you're still pretty close to the action.
Right.
And then if people got to go to the restroom, someone would be like, hey, we need you on, you know, row 3, section E. And you'd go and you'd sit there for 5 minutes and the people come back and they'd be like, you're in my seat. And you'd be like, no, it's okay. It's part of the show, but cool. Yeah, great.
It would be confusing. It would be confusing to come back to your seat and be like,
excuse me?
Because there's also like that fear. Like whenever I get up and leave my seat at any like live event like this, I do have, it's like leaving your cart in a grocery store and you're like terrified that like someone's going to come up and be like, I'm taking this cart.
Right.
And like all that hard work you put into like filling it with your groceries was going to be like gone. I feel the same way about leaving a seat at a live event where it's almost like, one, I hope nobody takes it. And two, what if I can't find it again? And so like every time I'm like walking down a row, I'm like having like active anxiety where I'm like, am I in the right row? Do I recognize the backs of these people's heads?
Right. Is this, I think that's where I was sitting, but there's people in my seats and
I'd probably be like, oh, someone's on my seat. I messed up. I should just leave.
Yeah. But so my experience was like, I didn't really like follow wrestling very much at all.
Okay.
But I would, sometimes I would also be a seat filler.
Okay.
And the, what I learned was if people who had really good seats got up and you went and sat in their seats, even for like 5 minutes, the excitement is like, this is awesome. It's so easy to get sucked in.
Oh, like it's worth being close.
Like, oh yeah. Like definitely if you want to go see a WWE match, try and get up close seats. Cause it is like an experience. Like,
okay.
First of all, those people are giant.
Sure.
Guys on stage, which is crazy. Actually, also had to drive one of them around one day.
Yeah.
Which was an interesting experience.
Were you driving your car?
No. So WWE would, this was, I was more like a guide for WWE. Like if it was the Globetrotters, yes, I had to go pick them up in my car and I was the driver and I did everything.
Oh my gosh.
For WWE, they would like rent big like Escalades and they'd have a driver and you'd just sort of be like along for the ride.
Okay.
Which was sort of weird because like I would be sitting in the front seat next to the driver being like, okay, this is like, here's where we're going next. Here's the next thing on the schedule. This is the address, you know,
right. Yep.
I didn't ever feel like I was super duper necessary. It seemed like I could have given someone a schedule with an email.
And they could have just followed.
Not that I'm complaining because it was very interesting to like travel around with, you know, WWE superstars. And, you know, I had lunch with Sheamus at a Panera once. He's
wow.
Like, he's like sitting here like, what do you think of these logos for a t-shirt? And I'm like, they look great, man.
The answer is, of course, I love them.
The answer is, of course, they love them and you're my favorite now.
Did people come up to him while he was at this Panera? Like, were people recognizing him?
No one at the Panera recognized him. We went to like a elementary school so he could like give a big, you know, talk about anti-bullying stuff and that was fun and, you know, all the kids knew who he was and that was very fun.
That is cool. That is cool. That it's so funny that you touched on elementary school because this was when you brought up our childhood fandom of professional wrestling. The first thing that came to mind was when we were students at Rocky Mount Elementary School in Franklin County.
Shout out.
They had a like a glass box, you know, like that you could like put stuff inside of.
I had completely forgotten about this glass box. Go ahead.
And okay, I don't know if our family had like the pulse for it, you know, but like, or maybe we were just literally the only people who were ever in inquiring about it. But it was the type of thing where almost like monthly or on some specific schedule, they would like allow a student to put something they collected like into the box.
It's such a good idea.
It is a good idea.
And they were
idea.
On top of it. Like, I think it was monthly. They would choose a student. And I mean, it could be anywhere, like, you know, third, fourth, fifth grade.
Yep.
And you would get to display your collection of stuff in the case.
And at one point in time, we displayed our collection of WWE action figures.
Did we? I'm surprised it was WWE and not like Star Wars, because I feel like we had way more Star Wars stuff.
We would have had way more. It must have just been like the year that we were there. Like I was in third grade, you were in fifth grade at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to be that. Like that had to be like just what we were into that specific year.
Because vacuum of time.
Yes, yes. And I remember that and Beanie Babies. I'm pretty sure we did it twice. This is why I wasn't sure if we had like a particular like, you know, like person at the front office who was just like, yeah, those Carlin kids always coming in with the great collectibles.
I have no idea. I feel like I remember the Beanie Babies too. I still have all of them in my basement right now in case you ever want any.
That's okay.
Yeah, you want some Beanie Babies?
I'm good.
I have Beanie Babies.
Because everybody thought they were going to be collectibles one day.
Okay. Let's take a hard segue.
Oh, wow. Look at you go.
I know. People noticed our segue dab
in
the last episode of The Pop, and now I feel like I gotta carry it forward.
And it is officially a part of The Pop.
It is officially a part of The Pop. If you're just listening, just know that if I said the word segue out loud, I also dabbed.
Air dabbed. Yep.
Air dabbed. Nice. Normalize air dabs equaling segues. Okay?
Exactly.
Everyone gets it.
You want to know what else I would like to normalize with segues is just spell them S-E-G-W-A-Y.
Oh, not segu.
Not segu.
Not like legume. You don't say legway.
I know.
Legwome.
Right. Year one of Super Carlin Brothers, I remember I made a video with the word segue in the title. And what I meant was air dab segue, like changing the subject. And I spelt it S-E-G-W-A-Y. And people were like, Ben, you know, that's like the kind of two-wheeled method of transportation.
Right,
and
like the mall cop
vehicle
of choice.
Not changing the subject in a fitting
Mm-mm.
time or manner.
No.
And I like, this is so bad because I feel like truly it's an honest mistake and I feel like most people probably would understand, but I was like ashamed. It's like, no, I spelled the title of my video wrong.
There is nothing worse than getting like a typo in the title of your video or let's say in the thumbnail of the video.
Oh, yeah.
It is so bad. You're like, because you feel that like red hot shame and inevitably so many of the comments are about that. But a thumbnail is very tricky because people will see the thumbnail and they'll click on it and then the thumbnail goes away.
Right.
Like, if it's in the title, they'll continue to see it.
Yeah. True.
The thumbnail one, though, people really need to like, you'll probably find it more about it on like Twitter or something where the image is static.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but I almost wonder if like from like the YouTube algorithm standpoint, like comments on a video, like help its promotability.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if there's something to just like put a typo in every single title and everybody will correct
you. Yeah. It's just like, get those comments in there.
Everybody's going to be like, oh guys.
Oh my gosh. One day.
We should misspell something in the title of today's episode. And I guarantee people are doing it. And they're like, this will be the moment where they're like, they did it on purpose.
Oh my God.
You're kidding me.
Oh my God. You're right. Then they know.
Now they know.
Oh, they've been had. If I can remember to misspell something in the title a week from now,
yes.
I will.
Excellent.
I will. That's going to be very fun. One time, very recently, our editor, Scott, who did a lot of editing for the main channel, he always would put in like a funny title he made up after
yes.
he like uploaded it to the channel. And
yep.
then I would go in and do like all the back end stuff and change the title to like the official title and stuff. But one day it was like late. I had just gotten Luke to bed. The video had finally gotten up and I was like, okay, I just like put everything in really fast and I changed everything except the title and Scott's like joke answer went up.
Oh my gosh.
And it was like actually real. It was like a really funny title. So it like, you know, a lot of people were like, oh my God, that's so funny. This is, you know, it was very funny. But to me, I was like, the title, how did I miss the title? What if that had been not funny?
Oh my, right. Yeah. So
like it worked out pretty good.
What if it had been not good?
Yeah. What if it had been not good? What if this was a horrible joke or something? Anyway, that's the thrills and funs of the YouTube back end.
Yes. Look at us go.
Look at us go.
That's very colorful stuff.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Anyway, what I was trying to segue into was collectibles.
Yeah.
So the thing that more recently I've been collecting, has been, and which people might have seen even on the Supercarlin Gaming channel, is Pokemon cards, Ben. We've talked about it on the Pop before.
We have talked about it on the Pop mm-hmm. before. I think that very early on, and I want to say I was like, maybe, and I could be wrong, someone could correct me, maybe like 3 inches ahead of the curve, where early on in the Pop, I think I was talking about how I really desperately wanted to go back and buy like an original booster pack, unopened, you know, like the Charizard, was it Venusaur and Blastoise
yes.
that were on the cover of like the first edition packs.
Right,
and I was like,
the original packs.
I just want to buy one just for the nostalgia of getting to open it and being like, you know, like see what it's like. And then I'm pretty sure in the time that has now since passed, those particular packs have just like exploded in value. Like I think at the time I was like, oh my God, it's kind of absurd. They're like, I don't know, $200 a pack or something. It's really extreme. And I think now it's like
way, way, way higher.
More.
The Pokemon card game at the moment is enjoying an enormous like renaissance.
Yeah.
Let me just say. Largely in part to one, I think Jake Paul from YouTube did like $1 million Pokemon card purchase on it made a video.
Was it Jake Paul or Logan Paul?
One of the Paul brothers.
A Paul.
Okay. We'll just call him Paul. Paul. Did that, and that sparked a lot. And then I think also just COVID and quarantine and hobbies resurfacing.
Yes.
Very, indoor hobbies resurfacing in a huge way.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. I have to tell you, having used to own like a saltwater aquarium store, we always knew that the months of basically like May through September were going to be slow because people were not like inside looking at their tanks. They're
right.
They're out doing outdoor activities, going on vacation, doing stuff like that. And then as soon as that cold weather hit is immediately when people were like,
oh, back inside.
Time to get back into my tank all of a sudden. Right. So like if you like that first like cold weekend is always like it's like packed.
Right.
So that, but on a quarantine scale.
Yeah. So anyway, I think even after you said that, we went out and bought a box of the most recent booster set that had come out at the time, and we opened that on the channel, and that was fun.
We did. We did like an unboxing of all 36 boosters.
Right. So since that time, I have like slowly been getting more and more back into the game. I've bought a few more boxes. I've been playing a lot of the online card game, which is actually a really well-serviced like game.
Yeah, so that's that, and that's set up by like in every single booster pack, you have that like one card that you're sort of like, what do you do with this?
Yeah,
you can actually like download like a digital pack of cards.
Right, it's not the same pack, but
okay, got it.
Yeah, it like won't be card for card or anything.
That would have been remarkable if they had like set it up so that it was like that specific.
That would be very interesting if they had managed to do that. I imagine they would hold more value because you could sell it and say like this card came in this pack and we'll have this on it.
Okay.
But that's not how it works. So anyway, I have two stories to tell. One is that just recently, like I've been getting more and more into it, and I was looking it up the other day, and there's like a new set, I think coming out. It'll be out by the time this podcast is out.
I think that it was released on 3/19, which is today.
Which is today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, oh, Ben, look, new set of Pokemon cards. Should we get a box? And you were like, let's get like 10. Yeah. And I was like, what? Huh? What?
Yeah, it was
this very weird thing.
It was an extremely satisfying like moment to like witness your face be like, wait,
what?
Is that can we do that?
Yes. Like it was the weirdest thing because it felt like obviously we can. If you want to. Then you could just buy 10.
Sure.
You know, you want it. But to me, it was like, this feels like breaking the rules. I don't know. Like, this is like, it'd be like if you finished opening all your Christmas presents and your parents were like, guess what? There's a second Christmas tree. You'd be like, what? I don't know.
How do you feel about that?
It's like, okay. I feel like I was supposed to wait another year. Am I allowed to do this?
Right.
Yeah. Which was just a very, very weird feeling. But rest assured, we eventually like decided, yeah, no, we can do it, and that'd be a crazy thing to do. So we have a ginormous order of Pokemon cards coming in.
We do. So we'll be sure to go live and unpackage all. Last time we did 36 packs. This time we're going to be doing 360
packs. So if we don't have the full collection at the end of it, then what's even the point?
As far as I'm concerned, that is exactly how I feel about it.
Right.
If we do not even have all of them at the end, then what is the point?
Then then having a full set of anything feels incredibly impressive at that point. But okay, so here's my other dilemma I'm facing that I feel like I need you to weigh in on.
Okay.
Okay, so throughout my life, anytime I've gotten into a hobby, if you get too deep into it, or not if you get too deep, once you're a certain level deep into it, I've witnessed a phenomenon that will happen. And it is that suddenly you will get like the bounty is what I'm going to call it. You will receive a bounty of hobby related things.
Okay.
Like either people will be like, oh, I used to do that. And you're like a person they can dump all their old stuff on.
Yeah.
People will be like, oh, yeah, or maybe it's not even though they're just dumping it. They're just like, I've got this. Or they just get to know this about you. And all of a sudden, like all the gifts you get are related to this thing.
Snowball gifts.
Yeah. Snowball gifts. Yeah, that can happen. But that's not exactly the phenomenon I'm describing. Recently, I discovered that one of our buddies, Steven, also collects Pokemon cards.
Very like kind of unexpectedly.
Very
too.
Unexpectedly.
He's like a big time like outdoorsman. Like he like all of his hobbies revolve around like outdoor rock climbing, mountain biking, road biking, like, you know, just anything like anything outside, through hiking, that type of stuff. And then like just quietly and maybe a little bit randomly, aggressively collects Pokemon cards.
Yeah, which and it turns out that the way he collects them and the way I use them are like puzzle pieces that were missing.
Yeah,
because Steven is simply out to have full sets of things.
Right.
Whereas what I am looking for is like competitive play.
Right.
So to that end, he doesn't use the online codes to redeem his packs online inside the game there, because what's it, because he's not playing. What are you going to do with just digital cards?
Right. Right.
You know,
right,
that's not as much fun to collect or anything. So he had a stack of, I kid you not, like 400 like online codes.
Okay.
Which he just very generously was like, yeah, you can just have these. I'm not gonna use them at all. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing. So cool. Like, I am guaranteed to have lots of, you know, inventory now.
Yes.
Inside
yes.
the digital card game, which is a really helpful place to like play test stuff and be like, would I spend money in real life to own this card? Yes, it is that useful sort of thing.
Sure, sure.
But in any case, this giant stack of cards now to me represents the bounty. And I went through and I actually entered them all in. You can like scan them in with a QR code reader, which made it way faster.
Right. I mean, because when I saw, it was a comically large stack of
comically,
like cards.
Like, if you can see me, it was like up to here on the, you know, the trophy next to us.
Right, right.
Huge stack of cards. And I got them all in there. And I have since not opened any of them. They're all just unopened inside the game.
Wait, so you have, I'm trying to keep up here because I don't speak the language exactly, but like, so that means that you entered all the QR codes, but you didn't specifically like reveal what is inside of the packs.
Right. Like, so you opened it and it gives you an unopened pack.
You've been telling me all about like the different like trading card battles you've been in over the past like 2-3 days. Mm-hmm. And none of this is including all of these free digital cards.
Correct.
The bounty that our friend Steven gave you.
Exactly.
How is that? Why have you not?
Well, here's why.
I'm
Ben.
Befuddled.
Okay, so you have spoken many times about Diablo 2.
Oh, yeah, my favorite game. Yeah.
Favorite game of all time. And I think one of my memories from that is that there was a particular item in the game called the Stone of Jordan.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a ring.
It was a ring. One to all skills.
Whilst useful as a character item, was more useful as a form of currency for buying other things you needed.
Especially when we were playing in our younger years, it was mm-hmm. it was basically like any other item in the game that you might be like trading for or attempting to acquire. Like a game title very commonly might be like, you know, Grandfather Blade for 5 SOJs.
Right.
And very much like as... And the reason I think for that was because they were items that were extraordinarily applicable to just about every single character. And to play the game, you probably were playing like just about every kind of character you could over
right.
time, because you would like get a character high enough that there's not that much left to do with it. So they're incredibly useful. But yeah, so that you're exactly right.
Okay.
SOJs.
So as I understand it, though, unopened packs of cards are sort of the like SOJs of the Pokemon trading online community. Like,
okay.
If you're, it's like, I, you know, opened, you know what they are, and maybe you have good stuff.
Right.
Unopened, they're like currency. We can be like, oh yeah, this one card you need, that's worth about like 10 unopened packs of cards.
Okay.
Or whatever. So I am stuck because I feel like whenever, like when we were both playing Diablo 2, I feel like whenever we'd reach the bounty stage, I would never handle it appropriately. I would get like, whatever items I got, whatever the big influx of free stuff from someone who was dumping their account, would be like, okay, oh my God, this is amazing. And then I don't feel like I would get much better at the game.
Okay.
Whereas I feel like someone would dump stuff on you and you'd be like, I'm rich forever. And you would turn that little bounty into a gianter bounty into a gianter bounty.
I very much enjoyed, like, and this is so weird about the, like, part of why the game of Diablo appealed to me is that it's not the narrative of the story. It's like not even necessarily like the gameplay itself. It is like the social aspect of it. And
yeah.
I think that like, especially at that point in my life, like I had no money to buy anything with.
Mm-hmm.
And so like within the game though, it was like, I could like acquire these rare goods and like, I mean, quite literally, maybe like in some cases just show off that I had them.
Right.
Like, and that was so fun for me, like to go build relationships with just like people from like all over the country. And so like, I had like friends,
yeah,
you know, that I was regularly playing with as like a 13-year-old.
Right.
And yeah, those established relationships very frequently led to someone like exiting the game. And then we had played together for so long. They were like, eh, here's all my stuff. Here's my account.
Right. Lucky you.
I know.
Well done.
It was the best.
Yeah.
Actually, I have to one small note, because once upon a time I told a story about going to chemistry camp and there was a girl in my class who I actually had a crush on, and we were out touring a physical dam, the Smith Mountain Lake Dam to learn about hydroelectricity and stuff. And then afterwards we went to this little docked in area where you could feed the carp popcorn. And so there's an area where, I mean, the carp were thick across the surface, and this girl that I was hanging out with falls into the carp. And it's it was this just unbelievable thing that happened where I was like, oh my God. In the moment, I had no idea what was going to happen to her. If you fell into water, it would be extremely unfortunate. You'd be completely wet. You're not really expecting it. But anyway, it's been one of these things where somehow, some way, there was no social media. There wasn't instant messaging at the time of this, particular thing. And so this girl just disappeared forever into the ether.
She's just gone.
And I have tried to use the pop before to be if you are that person, or if you know the person who fell in.
If you're carp girl,
I just want, can we discuss it? Because I just want to make sure that I am in fact remembering this unbelievably odd thing that happened the right way. But I bring all of that up specifically to bring it back to what we're talking about, which was my best friend on Diablo 2 back in the day was a character by the name of SF Bahamut.
Oh, okay.
That was the name. And that's all I think this was in the age of the internet, where the idea of putting your name out there was still, I think, pretty considered dangerous.
Yeah, don't do.
So we didn't know each other's names. So he just knew me as, my username, and I knew him by SF Bahamut. And so if I was talking to him, I just called him SF.
Right.
And so this is another one of those people where it's if you're out there and that's you, let me know.
If you're SF Bahamut,
I want to know. I want to thank you for what you did for me. Yeah.
Life changing.
I know.
So the question is, Ben, should I open the packs?
That is the question.
Yeah.
And my mind immediately went, so you compared them to SFJs, and I was like, oh, but they're so hard to find. All you would have to do is go and spend $5 for a single booster pack, and you would have one of those pieces of digital currency, so to speak. But then it also occurred to me that you could probably go online and pay $5 and buy an SOJ from one of these.
You
probably
could.
One of these people that sell them.
To be fair, if you could definitely go online and buy, if you could spend $5 and get 20, unopened packs.
Okay.
Or whatever.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm so curious. So, if it was me, I wouldn't open them.
You wouldn't open them.
I would use them as the currency that they are.
Well, see, this is the thing, though. It's like, I think this is probably what always stopped me on Diablo 2, was that, what if I spend them wrong? And then I don't have it, and then I can't get them back because the things I bought weren't valuable.
You have 400 of them.
I know. I know. It's so fun opening them, too, though.
Well, that's true too. That's exactly true. So yeah. I will bring it back to Diablo 2 once again.
Yeah.
The other thing inside of that game was the SOJ that we were talking about, the Stone of Jordan. It's a unique ring. But whenever you find a ring, you wouldn't find the Stone of Jordan on the ground. You would find a unique ring, and then you would identify it, and it could be any number of different unique rings, some of which were way more common, and then very rarely one would be an SOJ. And so there was a huge period of time on the game where there was a fad going around where people were trading unidentified unique rings.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like buying a scratcher ticket is what I would almost compare it to, because it was most likely it's not an SOJ, because even if you found 50 unidentified,
it's a Naggle ring, Ben.
It probably is a Naggle ring. 30 to MF though. Ugh. Not so bad. This was sort of that game, where there was somebody would put something out there and it would make it have just a bit more potential than what you just said a Naggle ring would have, because there was the opportunity for it to be something better.
Right.
And that, I don't know, that made it so, so very interesting to get involved with those types of things. But I don't know. You have so many of them that I can't imagine that there's anything that you could possibly trade them for that would be better than the potentially good items that might just be inside of these packs.
Yeah, I'm leaning more towards open the packs, because the other end is that there's no matter what going to be a certain number of rare things in them anyway.
Exactly.
Like, I'm guaranteed some power in that regard.
Okay, so I think open the packs.
I think open them.
That's okay. Where I'm at. I think it fits your personality too. Better, too.
I think so. Because that would be the thing. Like, if I ever had this, like, an SOJ in Diablo, which rarely did I ever, it wasn't to be like, great, I can go buy a thing with this. It was like, great, now I can use it.
Right, very. Well, that's why you needed, like, many.
Yeah,
so exactly. That you can have the characters wearing them and then also have some for currency sake.
Right, yeah. I never had such.
That's okay, though.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Okay, on this note, okay. I don't think we talked about this on the pop as much as we've talked about Diablo 2. They have recently announced that Diablo 2 was coming back. It's like, so if you're not in the know, Blizzard, who produces Diablo 2, recently announced that BlizzCon, that they are producing not only Diablo 4, but are updating Diablo 2 to put like a modern skin on it, but otherwise to make it pretty much the exact same game. And I feel like it was the news that you had been waiting for maybe for like the last 15 years.
I would say that's close. Yeah. I would say that's extremely close, because when I remember when Diablo 3 came out in 2012, I was so excited for it. It was like, I cannot wait. This is going to be so great. And the game is fine. Like, and I'm sure that there are plenty of people who have played it and extremely enjoyed it. And I'm not like criticizing the actual game itself, but it wasn't like a better version of Diablo 2, which is what I wanted.
Right.
Like,
because Diablo 3 does a bad job at being a better Diablo 2.
Exactly. And so that was like what really was revealed to me. And this is why I almost identified earlier when I was talking about it, that like it's not necessarily the storyline or like even everything to do with the game itself. It's like it's this like X factor that it had. And so I think that that's what was revealed to me when I got Diablo 3. It was like, So it turns out that I don't just love like this perspective or the way that you can find items or like fighting
slaying
these bosses.
Monsters. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's none of those things that is what made it so perfect. But what they're creating is a remastered Diablo 2. So it's like,
right.
They have like literally shown in the wipes on the screen. I mean, like brought tears to my eyes because they'll be showing you the like, you know, standard barbarian from Diablo 2. And they'll like wipe across the screen and it's the exact same level with the same monsters. It's just better looking ones. And it's like, oh my God, that's it. That's what I wanted. Like someone took it out of my brain and put it in front of me.
Yay.
I know.
Amazing.
I know. So whoever is that person who did this for me, I would love to give you a high five.
Yeah. Maybe it's SF Bahamut.
Do you think?
I doubt it.
We never know though.
He went on to work for Blizzard.
He went on to work for Blizzard.
He dumped his account and went on to work for them.
That seems likely.
Yeah.
That seems, I like to think that SF Bahamut is doing this.
That'd be great.
He's got my back once again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wasn't that your name? Like Watch Your Back Pally or something?
I think it was.
Yeah.
If this is 12-year-old me and my cleverness was that I think you played as a paladin at the time and I played as a barbarian.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, oh, well, the pallies are like, you know, paladin, pally. I was like, that's what you don't want to be. So watch your back.
Oh, boy. I never picked up on that.
Really?
No.
Oh, wow. Well, that's exactly what I was going for.
Yeah, well, there you go. Threat received. So 17 years later.
Right. Worth it. I stand by it.
Excellent.
Oh my God. Okay. So let's change subjects slightly. Still under the umbrella of things that I very much care about, but it's a fitting topic for today because of the actual shirt that I'm wearing, which is just a happy coincidence. But there was the thing that I was thinking about this morning, which was basically like, does having no idea what you're doing ever benefit your ability to think something is more possible than it actually is?
1,000%.
Okay. So in like we've talked about Name of the Wind a million times, but inside of the story, there's one moment where Quoth is talking about this girl that he knows and how she's like writing music. But because she was never really like taught any of the rules of music, he's like, it's not like she was good at navigating the walls of the maze. She just walked right through them.
Right. Just like smashing through them.
Yeah. It's like, it didn't even occur to her that this was a rule that I was breaking. So I did it anyway. And what the end result is this like chaotic beauty.
Right.
It's like amazing. And this is something that like, it's especially in my like early 20s, I think was very much happening all the time. I didn't know how hard it was to actually like do certain things. Mm-hmm. And so in my mind, everything was just like completely possible.
Right.
And so like the I referenced my shirt that I'm wearing earlier. If you can see it, you can see that it's like a green fish.
Yeah.
If not, I'm describing it for you. It's a green fish.
Yeah.
This was the logo for a project that I created in, I don't know, probably 2014, called Mountain Corals.
Okay.
Which was basically a project where my biggest client for my aquarium company was this museum called Center in the Square. And I had like an 8,000 gallon reef aquarium. And with that, I had what almost nobody who is an aquarium hobbyist has at their disposal, which is 8,000 gallons of stable, consistent seawater. Like, it's the bigger the aquarium is, the more stable it is, because the less any fluctuation
affects everything. Yeah.
And as a result, it's a really, really, really good circumstance to grow corals very rapidly, because you have that added benefit.
Okay.
So like realistically, best case scenario for growing corals is in wild, like out in the wild, their natural habitat, because wherever they exist is the perfect conditions for them to exist, and they thrive in those conditions. And what right. we're trying to do is recreate them. So I was like, okay, just like anything else, there are rare corals out there that have like extreme value, where mm-hmm. like people might buy like the size of an eraser head coral, like a single eye of a coral, for $1,000, because it could grow into multiple eyes.
And right.
you could, like your SOJs, basically cut them up and turn them into like currency.
Right.
And they would continue to grow over and over and over and over as frags. So I remember this was a situation where I had no idea how hard it was to actually like, I did have my own business at the time, but I don't think I realized how hard it would be to like create like an online store where the product that I had was something that I like, a living object that I was growing and was then going to have to like distribute nationally.
Okay.
Like,
right. Yeah.
You know, like I'm going to have to like grow the coral, take a picture of the coral, put that coral into a container, put that container into a box that is like climate controlled based on not only where I am, but where it's going, and then ship it overnight successfully, and then have like, you know, all of the necessary like tracking in right. between.
Yeah. Like you had like the giant piece of the puzzle, which, you know, doesn't normally even come with the box.
Right.
Figured out like, oh my God, like the big chunky 60% piece of this that no one can ever figure out. I've got that. That's got the that. How to grow it.
Yes.
I can grow them en masse. The problem is that's only 60%.
Right. And then the hard part starts.
Right.
Which is like all of the reasons why anybody who knows anything would not do it, because it's incredibly difficult to do. It's a very like sensitive thing. It's a very detail oriented thing, which are not things. I'm not a very detail oriented person in general.
Oh.
And so it was, I don't know. It was, I feel like I got so much further into creating this project and like actually doing it than I ever had any business doing, because I just didn't know.
Right.
And so I just kept like knocking down these invisible walls.
Right. Smashing through the walls. Like, okay, this is what I have to do next to send people coral overnight.
Right. Right. And so it was like, it was amazing to see like the type of problem solving that sort of like comes naturally to you, maybe in this particular way,
right?
Because you're like basically inventing the wheel for something that like probably if you just had a mentor could have told you exactly how to do it,
right?
But instead of having someone tell you how to do it, you literally had to like create the solutions,
right? You had to like build all the infrastructure yourself.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is I feel like this happens all the time. Have you ever like had an idea for an invention and then discovered that it is already an invention?
Oh, flat rate shipping, Ben.
That was you?
That was me. I was like, man, it doesn't make sense that when you go to the post office, you have to send stuff based on the size, the weight of it. It should just, if it fits, you should just buy the box. If it goes in the box, that's what, so, it, whatever.
If it fits, it if ships.
If it fits, it ships. Exactly.
I got you.
10-year-old me arrived at this and was like, I don't know why you can't just buy a box and put it in the box and that's fine. And then like, that was like a huge campaign for the U.S. Postal Service was, if it fits, it ships, flat rate shipping. And I was like, oh my gosh.
My idea.
Yeah.
Right.
10-year-old me. Look at that. Figured it out.
Right. So what I always wonder about things like that is like, does it make you a genius that you came up with that on your own? Because it is like quite literally a $1 billion idea.
Right.
Like, it is that good of an idea and you came up with it on your own. Maybe.
Well, so stuff like this is interesting because it's like, this is a question of what like society, like what is society sort of like demanding, like
sure.
Out of a problem, you know, like I don't think if Bill Gates didn't invent Microsoft, we wouldn't have Microsoft wouldn't be called Microsoft, and it might look a little bit differently, but we were going to, like, something was going to be Microsoft.
We were barreling towards it.
Yeah. You know, so, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they happened to be the ones who were in the right place at the right time to deliver on that. But if it wasn't them, someone was going to make this.
Sure.
And we'd have some version of, you know, office software.
Exactly. Right. And I always think about that too, like with the idea of like the wheel, you know, like it's everybody, like it's the example everyone goes to is for like the first invention, basically. But that is like one of those things where my brain is forced to believe that almost no matter what, the wheel would have come to, you know, it's more just like a matter of waiting for it to happen than if it would ever happen.
Right.
Does it take real genius, or is it just obvious if you have the right circumstances placed before you?
Well, that's a very deep question. I don't necessarily know if it makes you a genius, but like, I don't, you know, certainly you couldn't invent flat rate shipping unless something like the post office already existed.
It's a very good point.
You know?
Yeah. So the example that I always go to for this is when I used to do aquarium service, that needs to be on the bingo card. Ben talks about his aquarium company.
Yes.
Is there are these, it's like the most commonplace thing ever if you are inside of the aquarium hobby. But if you are not, people always think it is so ridiculously interesting. And that is the magnet cleaner that you can use.
Oh yes, and I know exactly what you're talking about. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating. So like the way that you clean an aquarium typically in like the most rapid and efficient sense is you literally drop like a scrubber on the inside of the tank, and then on the outside of the tank you have like a felt lined magnet that attaches, and you can like literally scrub the inside of the aquarium from the outside of the aquarium with this magnet cleaner.
Yes.
And every single time somebody, like I was doing this in public, which was literally 5 days a week, someone would be like, that is the most brilliant invention I have ever seen. And like, to me, it was, I had spent so much time with it that it was like, it didn't even seem remarkable to me. And it always felt like one of those inevitable inventions, because the idea of having to like reach your arm into the aquarium to clean it every single time is probably like one of the most like deterring aspects of maintaining an aquarium for a long period of time.
Right.
So I always think about this, like how long would it have taken for someone to be like, there's gotta be a way to clean the inside from the outside.
Right.
Like how do I clean the inside without having to put my arm on the inside?
How do it?
Magnets.
Yeah. Someone would have figured it out.
It's basically the explanation to everything.
Right. Are all solutions just out there waiting to be found?
Ooh, deep question. Deep question. I like it.
To be stumbled upon. Like they exist. You just have to find them.
Right. Yeah. Like how, oh man, this is like the carousel of progress at Disney World.
Yeah.
It is like, the more time I spend thinking about it, the more I love it. This is actually like Alice's favorite attraction in all of Disney World.
Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow.
It's a Great Big Beautiful. Yeah, that's it. That's it.
That one.
I was going to sing it, then I got really self-conscious about it.
Right away.
It's like, but the whole idea behind the Carousel of Progress is basically that like you're watching like each major moment throughout the 20th century as like a new invention basically came to households.
Right.
So like in the beginning, like, you know, they're talking about like, I can't imagine life being any better. Like when, you know,
you know, the refrigerator is still run by a large piece of ice sitting in the bottom of it.
Right. But it's like, we can keep things cold for 3 days. How great is that?
Yeah.
You know, it's like at one point in time, people would have been like, how could it be any better? And then fast forward 20 years and it's like, we have a refrigerator. We can put things in there and it'll be cold forever. No more hauling that ice block around. And you're like, well, okay.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, those are the types of things that I like love to spin my wheels on is like, what are the things that we're doing today where we have no idea what type of conveniences lie just 20 years in the future?
Right.
And like, the great news is we're going to find out. Like, we're going to know. And then we're going to wonder how we ever lived without it.
Right. This feels like the internet, you know, when we were kids, there was no internet. And now it's like, how were you doing anything?
Right.
How did you communicate to anyone? Or like texting, cell phones. You know, when we were kids, like, people didn't have cell phones.
Yes.
It was, you know, our dad had a car phone in the Trooper. Do you like just the word car phone? People are like, what's a car phone?
It literally, you know what I mean? Yes. And there was like a magnetic antenna on the roof of the car. Yeah. And it was sort of like,
that was mostly a prop. I'm pretty sure it did nothing.
I'm pretty sure it did nothing too. Yeah. And also it didn't seem like the phone worked just about anywhere, like super effectively, but it didn't never work.
Yeah.
But you're exactly right. Like that was like, I don't know, like what even getting a cell phone felt like it seems now like I don't even know if this is true, but I would imagine that like once you reach like middle school age, chances are you have one.
Mm-hmm.
Is sort of like what I would expect. But like, I think you were maybe a senior in high school and I was a sophomore in high school when we got our first cell phones.
Yes.
And that was like, prior to that, we had one that like our whole, other than like our dad who had the other, like the main one, everybody else just shared one.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, Ben has soccer practice today, so he needs to take the phone so we can call mom at the end of soccer practice to pick him up.
Exactly.
And that was about as far as it went.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise, if you wanted to talk to someone, you had to call the home phone, which would ring. I can't even imagine how annoying home phones would be today.
Oh, yes.
Like, I mean, it would just ring and the whole house would light up with ringing phones and you have to pick it up and find the person you needed.
Yeah.
And then you could listen in from other lines.
Oh my gosh. That was the word. Yeah. Like you'd like, I remember talking to like a high school girlfriend and then, you know, like mom picking up and it'd be like, mom, hang on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no privacy whatsoever. Yeah, you're right though. Like the idea of like a phone ringing for the entire house to hear, it's like how many fewer phone calls were happening? I've received 4 phone calls since we've been recording this podcast.
Well, so this is the other thing is that, you know, now you can set your phone to like largely screen or like silence incoming, you know, spam calls.
Right.
No such luck.
No such luck.
You know, imagine if every spam call your phone silenced actually rang for your entire house to hear.
Spam
and
calls.
And you didn't know who was on the other end until you answered.
Right.
Yeah.
Until caller ID came.
Until caller ID.
But yeah, spam calls must have been, that can't possibly be the right way to say those words, in order, much more effective than they are today.
Because you were almost guaranteed to get the person to pick up.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. So, very, very fascinating. Moving on here, as we sort of close out today's episode a little bit, I have one last question for you that I would like to just throw your way and everybody else, all the little kernels out there listening. It would be, if you had the opportunity to go to Mars and be like amongst the first, let's say 25 people to go, but you knew you were going to go and it was like a one-way ticket,
mm-hmm.
would there be, because we talked about legacy last week, like for a very long time. And I was like, ooh, this would be so interesting because it would be, you could have the legacy forever of being one of the first 25 people to ever go to live forever on Mars. Like with the idea being like, there would be no, like insufficient technology currently to there'd be enough to get you there, but maybe not enough to bring you back.
Interesting.
And the idea would be that like you would go and you would still live out the rest of your life. But like, as far as the people on Earth were concerned, you would be gone forever.
You're effectively dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In a very odd way.
Right.
Like,
cause you're right. If you're going to live out the rest of your life, as far as the people on Earth are concerned, it doesn't matter if the rocket ship blows up on takeoff or if you successfully land, you're gone no matter what.
We've brought this up
rocket
before.
Rocket ship, great word, by the way.
Rocket ship, great word. Yeah, it's like Schrodinger's cat, again.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like, you are simultaneously like alive and dead.
Right.
So the question is like, would that be enough of like a, maybe even a better question would be, how many people do you think would volunteer to do it? Like, would it be something that so few people would want to do that getting 25 people would be like really difficult?
No, not at all. I think you'd find tons of volunteers.
Okay.
Who would be willing to be the first people on Mars. I don't want to be the first people on Mars.
No.
I'm pretty happy here on Earth.
Okay.
Yeah, we're pretty set. Well, I think
it's a nice little plan.
Lest I find myself in a much more tragic situation at some point in the future, then yeah, I'm pretty set on Earth.
Okay. I love that. Yeah. Love that. And then I had one last question because I also thought about this from a conversation I think we had a couple of episodes ago where we were talking about like, what if the Earth exists in like this tiny little like microscopic way? And I think you like poked my one true host trophy and you were like, what if I just brought the end to like little civilizations that were living in those like little tiny spaces.
They're gone.
And it was like very, I don't know, mind warpy to think about. The other thought that I've had about our planet, you know, and people are like, there's so much other space out there, you know, like surely there's no way that there doesn't exist life somewhere else.
Sure.
Like how that would, I mean, that would represent, because if there wasn't, it would represent that planet Earth is the most remarkable thing ever. Like as far as any version of infinity as you could possibly think is concerned, it is the most remarkable thing ever,
ever
that life was able to exist in the manner that it does on this rock. Like, I think that is sort of like a fascinating way to look at it, or to take it one step further. If, because I think typically when we imagine life out there, there's always, your mind kind of goes crazy with like giant blob creatures and like, I don't know, different types of creations, right, and stuff. But like the other thought would be like, what if on that note, we are not the only one ever, but we were the first.
That's the, yeah, I've thought of that like before. Like, it seems like certainly there's no way there's not some other life, be it like microscopic organisms or full on sentient beings.
Right.
Some way, it's so big. There's so much. It's like too big for you to understand. It just feels impossible that there's not. But like, maybe is it like, but the argument people will always come back with like, well, then why haven't we like heard from them?
Sure.
Or why haven't we been able to like make contact? And it's like, one, still bigger than you're thinking.
Right.
But
right.
Two, like, what if, you know, you always think of other aliens as being way more advanced than us, but it's like, what if we are the most advanced? Like, someone has to be the first most advanced. And it's like, it seems very unlikely that that would be the case, but it's not. But what if we are?
Yes, it's exactly that. Someone's got to be.
Someone's got to be the first most advanced.
Right, yeah.
Exactly. Maybe it's us.
Maybe it's us. Way to go, Earth.
Yeah.
We did it. Big global high five for everybody.
Well done, everyone. Look at us.
We did such a great job.
The other thing. Well, so the other way more depressing way to look at it would be that not only is it so big, but time is so long, you know? Whereas to the universe, maybe the entire lifespan of the Earth itself is just like, you know, basically nothing.
Oh, sure.
So it's like, who's to say? Sure, maybe there were other sentient lives out there at some point, but maybe they have completely come and completely gone.
Right.
Since. And since. That's, you know.
Just since. Yeah.
You know, like maybe they were wildly more technologically advanced than us, and whatever sun, star was providing their planet with light died out, gone. And it happened billions of years before the our sun was even around, you know? Wow. Okay, this is a fun place to end. We're at a real high point.
There you go. Everybody at home is like, guys.
Bring it down.
Right.
You know what? The great news is it really doesn't matter because we're here now.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And just be just so grateful for that today. That's right. A good thing to keep in mind. Also, I want to be grateful towards a special viewer that we've had out there for quite some time, who I would like to wish a very special happy 50th birthday today.
Oh.
It's Geek Teach.
Oh, Geek Teach. Happy birthday.
Yes. This is like a really kind of a cool thing. This is just like someone who has been around the Super Carlin Brothers community for years and years and years. We've met them in person before at like one of the Super Carlin Brothers meetups.
Yeah.
So we just wanted to wish you a very special happy 50th birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
There you go. And as we close out today's episode, of course, as always, I want your thoughts on everything that we talked about today. We had some big thoughts today, it felt like, from WWE to what if we are the only living people out there ever.
And Pokemon cards.
There was that too.
Yeah.
So if you have any feedback, there's lots of different ways you can do it. You can leave a comment on this video if you're watching on YouTube. You can send me an email at popcornculturepod@gmail.com. You can go to our Reddit page, which is r/popcornculture. Mm-hmm. Did I get it right? I nailed it.
You got it. You nailed
yes,
it.
Yes, I'm finally learning the jargons.
Yes.
So many different ways. You could leave a review if you feel like it. That would also always be appreciated. Also, last note, I believe that today is the very last episode that will go live before you can no longer get your own Fred the Cup as one of the Patreon tiers over at patreon.com/popcornculture. It is the $25 tier, where quarterly we are going to have a cool exclusive piece of Popcorn Culture merch.
Yes, and on that... Oh, sorry.
Oh, would you like to teaser it?
I will say that we have been working on the second quarter exclusive merch item.
We have been. We have like mad scientists.
We have a prototype on the way.
We have
a prototype, Ben. I like saying that.
It was like, we ordered a prototype. I told everyone who would listen, which was Alice, but she heard it at least twice.
Yeah.
I was like, did I tell you about the prototype? Because it's coming.
Oh, it's coming. And it's going to be cool. And I'm so excited for it.
It is going to be super cool. So again, guys, if you want to check that out, you can do so at patreon.com/popcornculture. Link is in the description down below. Otherwise, until next week,
pop, pop. We'll